Welcome to the Love of the Game podcast, the podcast that takes you into the gym with different coaches, players, and trainers within the game of basketball. Hosted by shooting coach Dave Love.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning into the Love of the Game podcast. I'm Dave Love, the host of the show. I want to express my gratitude for you downloading the podcast. We had a great response to the first time around with the podcast, and I want to encourage you, if you can do one thing to help me out, that would be take a moment to go to the iTunes store page for this podcast and please rate that the podcast highly. That goes a long way towards getting the word out to other people and getting us higher on the list. I don't exactly know how this all works, but this is what I'm told. If you can just help us out by rating the podcast, it would be greatly appreciated. This week on the podcast, we have Casey Wheel. Casey's a trainer from the San Diego area and somebody that I came in contact with through Jordan Webb, who is the trainer for the Tulsa 66ers in the NBA D League, and I got to know Jordan over 10 days working with the 66ers, and Jordan passed along Casey's information, and we've had a couple of conversations. Interesting guy with some new ideas or expanding ideas on the world of training, and thought it would be interesting for you guys to listen and hear some of the things that he's working on. If you're interested in hosting one of my clinics in the area, in your area, then please get a hold of me. You can find me on my webpage, theloveofthegame.com, or on Twitter at Coach Dave Love. So without any further ado, this is our interview with Casey Wheel. Casey, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate your time. How are things?
Things are great, Dave. How's everything with you up there in the cold areas?
It hasn't been that cold for us, actually, this winter. You may think it's freezing, but for us, it's been actually a glorious winter, although we're looking forward to a nice spring, hopefully, coming soon. So I want to jump right in. Tell me a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what sports you started playing when you were younger.
Yeah, I actually, it's funny, I'm actually born and bred in the mountains of Vermont, so I'm all aware of the cold weather stuff. So I grew up in the mountains, grew up playing probably every sport possible, basketball, soccer, baseball, hockey, skiing, snowboarding, any winter sport, you name it.
And did you have a favorite? Did you have one that really sort of grabbed you?
I played hockey a lot since it was kind of like our Friday Night Lights up there was our hockey instead of football down in the South or in Texas or whatnot. We had hockey and skiing. So I grew up naturally doing that because it was a winter town. But going into high school, basketball was my big sport.
Okay.
And so it not being a basketball town, it was hard to get everybody involved, but we ended up having some good high school teams for our area, and it was a lot of fun, and grew up with having some friends and neighbors and good people around me that also loved playing too. So that it manifests itself, and it was really cool to see how the sport kind of took off and in our little Vermont town, our little ski town.
And did you have any illusions of playing at a high level, or any ideas of playing any sport at a high level?
Yeah, actually, I tried to play in Division III out of high school, going into college. I'm 5'9", 160 pounds, and I probably gained 10 pounds since high school area. So, I was like 150, 145 coming out of high school. So I wasn't very big. I was relatively quick, but I didn't have the skill set that I thought I did going into Division III. And so I busted my butt trying to make the team there. And in my freshman year, I didn't play that well in the tryouts. And then my sophomore year, I thought I played well enough to make the team. But even in Division III, there's politics. And, you know, he already had his players, and I kind of came on too late. So it is what it is, and I wouldn't regret it for a second. But I learned a lot, and it kind of sparked some things for me anyway that I think that have benefited me now.
And so where did you start to make the transition from playing into what you're doing now?
probably about right after that, I wasn't happy. I was doing a sport management major, and it was more in the business sense of sports management. And I realized I couldn't be a shirt and tie, 9 to 5, go to office thing. Right. So I wanted to be hands-on with athletes. I had trained, I got really into weightlifting and speed training and trying to get my vertical higher all through high school and college. So that always took hold of me. So I figured, hey, why not get out of the cold in the Northeast, move out to San Diego, and start as an intern under a strength coach. And so I kind of just jumped in my car once I got in and headed out west. So it was pretty impulsive. And once I got in, I knew I wanted to get out of town and go see a new part of the country. So it just kind of happened like it did. It was really kind of intuitive feeling.
Okay, and now explain to me where you are right now within your career and the kind of things, because you're doing what it sounds like a fairly traditional strength and conditioning aspect, but you're trying to add a twist to it. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So after college, I always kind of figured my skill set didn't develop because of genetics, and maybe I just wasn't, you know, as born as gifted as these other guys. And then I came out west and I did some internships and stumbled upon something after an internship with the high school that I could work with another private school that was just starting. And so it was very traditional sense of weight training and that, but I became fascinated over the past 2 or 3 years with talent development, with skill development, and with skill acquisition, and how people really can get better at things that we oftentimes assume are genetic or innate or, you know, are gifts. And so my research outside of strength conditioning has really been in how people develop skills and how certain abilities blossom and how players can grow much faster than others and what the reason is and why people are considered the best at what they do compared to somebody who's just below that and what the difference is. And so what I've recently started to do with all my research is I'm starting to make handouts to where the kids will get handouts that teach them about deliberate practice, that teach them about mindfulness, that teach them about finding what I call the edge practice, and just a balance of skill development in terms of how much should they be working out, practicing with the team, and maybe practicing on individual skills, and how that can all do that in certain ways where it all comes together to me that makes the complete athlete. And where a lot of kids that just don't know how to do that yet, they just think either, oh, I just got to go to practice, or I just need to go, you know, if, for instance, for basketball, what I did a lot was I just went and shot jumpers.
Right, as a lot of people do.
Yeah, they just go and they shoot and they shoot and they shoot. And that's great because they, you know, they're putting in work ethic and, you know, they have this drive. But I think if they just practice a little bit more efficiently, their skills would go through the roof. And they would just, their improvement would just skyrocket if they just put themselves in a different mindset that instead of going to make everything, I'm actually going to struggle a little bit. I want to practice to the point where I'm a little bit, what people say, get comfortable being uncomfortable. But to a point where, yeah, you want to struggle because that's when your brain and that's where your body really adapt and get better. But I don't think people typically practice like that.
Can you give me a common example of a player who isn't working through a deliberate practice? They're just mindlessly going and executing a task, and then an example of somebody who would be taking it to the next level, just so we can put this in context?
Yeah. So growing up, everybody kind of has that hot shot around that, you know, they just can do everything, whether it be if it is genetic or if it is kind of environmental thing where they just had, you know, brothers and sisters that help them push and they just have this cocky attitude. They go in and they almost like brag about, you know, I make everything on you guys and I do this and that. And I almost feel bad for those guys more than anything, because they probably have a little bit more, if there is genetic ability, they probably have a little bit more that they could reach another level that they don't even know yet. But they get so content on where they are, and they're kind of happy being the hotshot, when if I look at it, I feel sorry, because I know if they pushed themselves and changed their mindset and did a little paradigm shift, that they could get to another level that they don't even know. Anybody can push themselves and learn from the game every day. You don't need to have the highest competition to play against. And then on the other hand, the kid who goes and works just every day, he just goes in, pays attention to coach, listens to everything, does the stuff outside that, you know, you've never heard of a great athlete or a really excellent or elite athlete that has gotten there who doesn't learn from the game itself and try and do it themselves. Nobody's ever – they've always had this inner drive that they've gotten to that you don't see with people like, oh, yeah, they've had somebody carry them the whole way. You know, take, for instance, like Jeremy Lin now. That guy, all of a sudden, like, where has he come from? If you look at what he's done in the past, that guy's put in so much work on his own. And now we're just kind of seeing it blossom. Now we're starting to see his game flourish. But that's years in the making. That wasn't just a lucky break that he got because Coach D'Antoni's, you know, has a good system for him. That guy can play for real. So
now, what is a simple thing that an athlete can start with if they're realizing, okay, maybe I'm in camp A where I'm just getting by on my natural ability? What's one simple thing that we can change to get the ball rolling in the other direction, to get it going towards more deliberate practice and some of the things that you're working on with Brain Highways?
Yeah, with Brain Highways, yeah, we developed. I have to give credit to Nancy, the person who helped me develop the program. She came up with these numbers, and it made sense that if you're practicing deliberately, you're probably hitting, we said, a 60 to 85% range, somewhere in that area. If you're really deliberately practicing, it might change depending on the skill because, I mean, obviously in NBA, you know, almost every league, they hit about 40% during games, mm-hmm. So it might change for skill to skill and from situation to situation. But in practice, we say, think about trying to aim for 60 to 80% and nailing it. If you're hitting 80 to 90 to 100%, you need to figure out a way to make it harder. If you're hitting 40 to 50%, I'm saying you might actually need to regress and pull it back and figure out a way to make it a little bit easier for yourself so that you can get yourself to a level where it's going to actually, what we call it mindful mile in practice. If you've read the Talent Code, there's a whole chapter on how the body wraps myelin, which sends the nerve impulses, which helps talent development and skill development. We think in that 60 to 80% range is when it gets wrapped the most. And actually, Daniel Coyle, the author of that book, later on in a blog post, he called it the Goldilocks theory, the one's too hot, one's too cold, it's just right. And he actually put the same numbers as we did, which was kind of interesting.
Okay. Now, do you find that the opposite is also true, where you'll get players who haven't developed a fundamental strongly enough, but they're trying to jump levels and get to something that's maybe too difficult for them as well?
Absolutely. I actually, in the weightlifting setting, boys are just typically known for this. They, you know, for me, even just doing, in terms of weight, say I'm doing I'm doing a dumbbell row or a bench press, you know, they're going to go for the heaviest weight possible where they can get one, where I kind of want to pull them back and say, hey, I want you to own 6 to 8 reps on this certain weight. Or if it's basketball or soccer, let's say they're struggling, we need to just pull it back, get them in a certain range to where I think that really develops the skill and develops their body much better, in a much better way.
You use an expression that I just read on your blog, own it. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, I just wrote about that. Greg Cook, the one of the creators of the Functional Movement Screen, which is an amazing assessment or screen, I would say. I guess it's an assessment tool as well for me. I remember always hearing him say, now I want you to own that. And it just kind of always stuck with me. And over the past year or so, I've been using own it in a lot of phrases where I want them to own the position, own the details, own the posture, own your body to where you control the weight, you control the movement, you control what you're doing. In sports, you can use that in anything. Hey, I want you to own this drill right now. I want you to take control of it to where you're not just surviving, you're thriving.
Right.
And so a lot of the times in my setting, in weightlifting settings, I'll see it in their face where I just see a super tense face and they're just holding on for dear life. They're not even breathing. And I pull them back a little bit and I want them now, let's say, I want them to own that position, whether it be some sort of squat or deadlift or when we do some core work. I want them to own the feeling of it rather than just get through and get it done. What I see when I say that is I see their eyes light up and I see their brain really engage, and that's actually what I'm after. I want them to be engaged. I want them to be accountable for their own thing. I want them to want to do it instead of me just telling them what to do. You know what I mean? So
what kind of mistakes do you look back, maybe not mistakes, maybe that's too harsh a word, but the little things that you look back at yourself as a coach a couple of years ago and think, man, I've grown so much in this area, or I wish I could go back and teach myself this particular thing that you just didn't learn soon enough, or you wish you had that tool in your tool bag, that kind of idea. What would you go back and teach yourself 5 years ago, for example, that you know now?
I would probably have to say a couple of years ago, I was always searching for the outcome to be perfect. And now my mindset has changed to what little behavior, what little conscious thing can I help them change that's going to improve them, instead of focusing on the end outcome that I want to be just perfect. And I would get that, and it would lead to me, it would lead for me to get frustrated with athletes and with the kids I worked with, because I'm working with high school kids who really have no experience. And so now I've really let my energy kind of settle down, and it comes off much better, and I get frustrated way it's much harder for me to get frustrated, and it's much easier for me to let go of little things. And let's just focus on one to two things at a time. And I've just seen my connection with the athletes grow a lot, and also their improvement has gotten a lot better to me. It has grown.
Well, and that would mimic what I was going to say if the same question were asked back at me, that I'm much more patient than I was a couple of years ago. And I think one of the key things that stood out for me was my mentor saying, you know, shooters, and he pointed up at the rim, he says, you don't control what happens up there. You control what your body does that causes that result. And if you shoot a good shot, it's a good shot whether the ball goes in or not. And so you just got to live with those results and recognize that the statistics are going to take care of themselves over time. You're going to miss good shots, but you're also going to turn around and you're going to get some bounces and make some of your bad ones. So relax, you know, don't worry about it, and move on to the next one. Shoot that next one as well as you possibly could as well.
Exactly. And then I think a lot of I'd like to ask kind of your opinion on some things with this. Is a lot of kids they think that, and they hear these statements, and they almost hear the cliches, and they're like, oh, you just got, you know, one shot at a time and whatnot. But some techniques that maybe you use that could help me too on how you teach that, how you get them to realize that, how you get them to own that, I guess, is what I usually like to say.
I think one of the things that's helped me a lot, and you only come through this with experience or come by this with experience, is that I've become much better at preparing athletes for the failures that they're going to encounter along the way. That there's no escalator to success. It's not constantly going up. Everybody's going to have peaks and valleys along the way. So telling them, here's most likely the peak that you're, or the valley that you're going to hit here. And when that happens, you know, we're not going to worry about it. We're not going to stress out. And then they hit that valley and you've prepped them for it. And so it doesn't seem like that big a deal. Like one of the things I'll say in a clinic that I do is, okay, we're trying to get more arc on the basketball. Here's the thing that we're physically doing to try to get that arc. Be aware that if you shoot the ball with more arc and you shoot it with the same force that you're used to shooting it, it's not going to go as far. So your reaction could be seeing an air ball short and thinking, oh my goodness, this isn't working. But in reality, that airball short is telling you that it is working. You're just not used to it yet. You shot it with more arc, which is what we're trying to do. You just didn't shoot it firmly enough, so shoot it more firmly next time. And when athletes can start to hear that you know what they're going to be facing, it builds a tremendous amount of touch or a trust. And now if they see you not stressing out about a little valley that they've hit, then they're not going to stress out as much about it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, actually, I've been recently reading Stephen Covey's The Eighth Habit, and there's two concepts that really kind of caught my attention. He was talking about paradigm shifts, and he thought of paradigms as maps. And he said, sometimes people are really looking at the wrong map. And so that, to me, that's what one of your cases was, that the kid was looking at that arc shot as saying, oh my gosh, my jump shot's awful. When in actuality, he should be looking at another map saying, hey, this is helping me actually develop a shot that's going to help me in the future, where I'm going to get to my destination a little bit better.
Right. There's a book, The Inner Game of Tennis, and one comment that really stuck with me in that book was, let's imagine you and I are playing tennis, and I don't have a tremendous amount of confidence in my serve, and so I don't feel great about myself when I'm serving. So I hit a serve, and I hit it out. And okay. I think my inner monologue is, I'm not very good at this. And yeah. Maybe your monologue is something different. Who knows what it could be. But the only person that actually has it right is the umpire, who said, the ball is out. That's all that happened. I'm not bad. I'm not a bad person. I'm not a bad server. That serve was out. That's all that we need to. So it's not judging yourself based on the outcome. It's judging just the outcome.
Exactly. Yeah. Another thing from that book that caught my attention, he's like, there's constant stimulus that we get, whether it be when you hit a shot and it goes out, that's the outcome. There's always a space in between the stimulus and the response that we can either looking through a window or looking in a mirror. Either we can look in a mirror and say, oh, how can I help adjust this? Or I can look through a window and either blame others or look at it as a failure or something like that, instead of reflecting on it and using it. And I think a lot of people playing sports have trouble using struggle as a tool to improve, instead of using it as, you know, a way to either judge themselves or label themselves, which to me is that just leads to a road that I wouldn't want.
Where I asked you kind of where you saw yourself 5 years ago in a roundabout sort of way, but what are the next steps that you hope to take within your career over the next five?
I'm kind of in a crossroads, I would say, with that. I've done a lot of research in the world of talent development and skill development, and I'm thinking of applying that within stuff. I'm fidgeting with ways to apply that, as well as I love doing the strength conditioning and this. I call it more athletic development than anything. And I love basketball with all my heart, and I want to continue doing that. So in 5 years, I could see myself easily still being with the school and continuing my growth through those kids, or I could easily see me try to start my own business where I help youth all the way from ages 5 to 7 up through high school into college. I could see myself going either way right now. Either way, I know I'd be happy, because I love what I do, which I feel very grateful for, because I know not a lot of people wake up and are excited to go to work. But I see myself continuing this growth and fine-tuning programs and searching for the Holy Grail, even though I'm never going to get there. But that's the fun part. But, it's a toss-up right now. I'm kind of in a crossroads in what I want to do, but it's fun, and I enjoy it. And I know that's – when I find it, it's not going to be fun anymore. So I just want to keep finding it.
Well, and I find for myself that – as I get better at what I'm doing, I enjoy coaching more than I enjoyed playing. The idea of going out and playing, I'm always thinking, geez, I'm pushing 40 years old here. I don't want to get hurt. But I love going out, and I get tingles on the back of my neck when I'm working with a player early on in their development, and I see that they're getting it. And yeah. There's just that moment where they, okay, here we go. And I don't know if they can feel it, and most of the time I would guess they can't, but honest to goodness, like the shivers go up my spine as I think, okay, he's getting it for, or she's getting it for just this brief moment, and we're making progress, and it's going to be slow, but we're going to get there. So I agree, it's a lot of fun. So now let me ask you this. Where do you see a lot of errors being made in people? Maybe it's a coach who's at a lower level, like a community team, and it's a bunch of 12-year-old boys or a junior high girl team. What mistakes do you see being made, whether it's on the court or in the weight room?
I'll go on the court first, because I do see a fair amount of youth sports still. I work at a school where there's middle school teams. I get to observe some other teams, and I go around with some parents that I know. I see a lot of times it's just such a big waste of time with some of these old school drills that nobody's ever thought of the purpose of. Things, for instance, the three-man weave.
Okay.
What the heck is the purpose of this three-man weave? I just don't get it. We waste 5 minutes warming up with it when I think there's just completely more efficient things to do, whether it's individualizing something for your players with ball handling or shooting or something like that. You can get an actual warm-up in much quicker in a much more efficient way. Using just line drills and drills that you don't know if they're helping anybody. It's just kind of, oh, this is what's always been done, so that's what I did as a kid, and let's just do that with these kids. They like it, and it's fun.
Okay, so what should that coach sub out or sub in? You've subbed out three-person weave. What needs to go in?
A line dribbling. For instance, let's say we get a group of middle school kids who can typically, like, they can dribble a ball pretty quick. You know what I mean? They can bounce it in one hand and probably switch over and cross over, maybe go between their legs. They know how to dribble a ball. They don't know how to ball handle. They don't know how to react to somebody, a defender. So instead of taking line drills where they're just going back and forth, why not put in, I take this from Brian McCormick, who's a great basketball mind, tag drills, where either there's two teams and you have to tag them or knock away a ball while you're dribbling yours, or you try and play. We made up a game called foosball where you can put guys on the free throw line half court and whatnot, and a player's trying to dribble through the foosball while the other guys are trying to knock it out. Things where it's reactionary, where they're dribbling, they're having fun, it's a tag game, they're enjoying practice, but it's also, you know, very, very deliberate practice in the sense that they might struggle, and then you have to learn how to pull it back for each kid, and that's where the fun of coaching is, but it's also where they're going to learn the most, to me, instead of just, all right, let's dribble down, right hand, left hand, back. Like, to me, that's just pretty useless, unless they're at a really low dribbling level, a really low basketball level.
Okay, what about in the weight room?
Weight room, oh, man.
So many?
Sorry, there's so much confusion in the fitness and strength conditioning industry. It's absolutely bonkers, but stick to basics. If anything, we look at these pro athlete programs that are in Slam Magazine or Muscle and Fitness that are made for athletes that are really well developed, or if you look in the Muscle and Fitness, those are made for guys on steroids. And so we take these programs. It's like trying to give calculus to a second grader, you know what I mean? Like, this kid has no idea the basics and has no strength behind it, yet you want to give him the hardest thing possible. So keeping it really basic with just basic split squats or lunges, push-ups, pull-ups, basic rows, planks, stuff like that, to where they're just learning how to control their body, how to move their body. Lunges are great after a certain point, stuff like that. But when you get these kids, especially middle school, high school level, who see these programs from LeBron James and what does he do in the weight room, I'm like, he's 6'8", 260. He doesn't need to do much anymore in the weight room. He just needs to stay healthy so he can, you know, keep playing. So it's people just kind of get these fantasy dreams instead of just seeing where they're at, where I need to go, what do I need to do, basics every day.
Along those lines, when would you even at what age would you move on from just the body weight exercises? Like, until what age are you basically only doing body weight?
It depends on biological age, which can be much different for a lot of kids. This I learned a lot from TPI, which is Titleist Performance Institute. They do a great junior program, and they have some good certifications that I learned a lot from. I would say middle school, high school, but it really depends. And honestly, I've broken my own rules where if a kid, I would probably say the best time to do it is right after their highest growth spurt. So it's still probably in puberty, but it's about when they're done their peak height velocity, which is, you know, their peak growing stage. About, I think that the rule is about 12 to 18 months is when you want to start really getting some strength stuff in. But that doesn't mean you can't give a kid, you know, med balls and dumbbells to move through, because if you, like me growing up, the strongest kids in our town were farm boys. They had to move, you know, they had to move big, heavy stuff all the time. I'm pretty sure their growth wasn't stunted at all. So there's a lot of myths with the growth stunts and all that. I think you can use med balls and use stuff. I really wouldn't get into heavier lifts until probably high school. I would keep it relatively body weight until they're through their peak height velocity.
Any great stories that you can tell us, whether it's something humorous that kind of happened or really maybe it's a heartwarming story from a player that you were working with, or just a moment that kind of sticks with you that kind of defines why you do what you do?
I'm still really young in my career and I haven't had like the big, I mean, I don't even care if I get the big story. I just enjoy working with these kids.
But the big story doesn't always have to be with the big name.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Or yeah, just like it's fun developing the relationships. I'd have to say right now, one of the girls I'm working with, Megan Smith, she's a water polo player. Really, she's going to Cal next year, which, I mean, I just started working with her this year, so it's nothing like that. She one day I had to leave, and then we were with another girl that we train with, and we were talking about how I might have to leave for a little bit, and she's like, I don't want to find another trainer. And just literally that alone, like the fact that I made the connection with her really hit me, like, oh man, I do some good with some of these people. And when the parents come up and say, hey, they don't like doing anything fitness until you came along or any type of working out, that's hit me. I think I'm starting some of those stories now, or if like in maybe in 2-3 years you come to me and be like, look, this kid came from like the weakest kid I've ever seen. Now it's all of a sudden they're, you know, jumping through the roof and moving stuff and have an attitude that I couldn't believe. But it's coming along, and I really enjoy it, and I see the progress, and of course it's a very small everyday thing. So I'd probably say those two right now are kind of the stories that have stuck with me so far.
Yeah, I've got a guy on the University of Calgary men's team who just became the all-time leading scorer in Canadian university basketball, and that doesn't really have anything to do with me because he did 4 years of it at a different school and has just come to us for his fifth year and broke the record. And he had, his name's Boris Bakovic, he had torn a ligament in his knee, his MCL in, I want to say in October, and basically realized, okay, I'm coming back maybe in February. And he basically said, I want to rebuild my shot. And I said to him, Boris, I don't know if that's a good idea. Like, this is your senior year. You want to win. Let's just get you back. And we'll get some reps up, but let's not make major changes. And he basically said, no, I'm doing this whether you're going to help me or not. And I said, okay, I'm going to help you then. And he's been the one of my favorite players at any level to work with, like just such a nice guy, hardworking guy, even keeled. And it, their season just ended a couple days ago, and he sent me a text just saying, "The work that you have done with me so far has been amazing. You've been the best thing that's happened to me in my basketball career." And just like you with yours, you know, that hit me very, very hard in a good way.
Exactly. And it's, yeah, those type of, you kind of coach for those reasons, even though you never, I mean, we can never take the credit for an athlete.
No.
Like, we don't even expect to, because there's so many different factors that go in. Like, maybe I just had like a 0.01 percentage change, but to them, it just meant the world that we helped them on their journey. And that's the fun part.
In wrapping up, what would you recommend as far as a video or a book for somebody who's listening to go out and grab?
Video, if you're doing training for sports performance training, I'd probably get, if you're pretty into training, Charlie Weingrop's Training Equals Rehab, Rehab Equals Training. He goes over a lot of basics. And I would go read Mike Boyle's Advances in Functional Training. Those two are pretty essential for a strength coach to read and to use. And then, yeah, basketball-wise, I did a point guard basketball college when I was in high school, and Stuff by Dick DiVenzio is probably one of the best basketball books I've ever read.
Perfect. And how can people stay in touch with you?
Oh, shoot me or go to my blog at cwheel.blogspot.com. I write pretty weekly on there. I'm on Facebook, Casey Wheel. I'm on Twitter under Coach Wheel. So any of those three, send me an email. I love meeting other coaches and connecting.
And that's Wheel.
Yeah,
that's the spelling of wheel. So I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us. And hopefully I can have you back on in the coming weeks or coming months, and we'll continue on with the conversation.
Dave, this is a lot of fun. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, Casey. You take care. Thank you again to Casey Wheel for being a guest on the podcast. I sure enjoyed speaking with him. If you have a question for me, probably the best way to go about getting that question to me is on our Facebook page, The Love of the Game. Just look for that page, leave a comment. If I can answer it on the Facebook page, I will. If it's a little bit more in-depth and we need to explain some more things, then maybe it's better that I answer it here on the podcast, and I'll sure do that. It'll be a great way for us to get a dialogue and a conversation going. And if you're looking forward to hosting a clinic in your area, then you can find me through my website, www.thelovedofthegame.com. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us for the Love of the Game podcast. Follow Dave on Twitter at Coach Dave Love, or on Facebook, The Love of the Game. If you're interested in hosting a day of shooting clinics in your area with Coach Dave Love, you can contact him through thelovedofthegame.com.